Hi, I'm Elsie, anorexic bulimic. I am from Mercer Island, Washington State, or at least I live there currently. I have a sponsor. I've worked all 12 steps. I've been sober since March 22nd of 2015. So that's about 6.5 years. And when I was asked to share about getting sober, I thought, okay, I think I'm qualified to do that. And it dawned on me when I thought about getting sober, my interpretation of that is steps zero and one. And that was really before I had a concept of a higher power, or at least an understanding of a higher power. And so at that point, when I made that decision to get sober and was 100% willing to do whatever it took to get sober, my sponsor was really my higher power. And it was pretty simple. It was just take direction. That was the business I was in, the business of taking direction and surrendering exercise, and the control that I had over my food, body weight, shape, and size. It gave me an instant freedom. It was as if I needed permission to let all of that go. And before I had a conception of a higher power, an understanding of a higher power, my sponsor gave me that permission. She said, "You can be happy, joyous, and free, and here's how you do it." And it was pretty much that simple. So I came into a meeting, and I think 3 weeks later, I got a sponsor. A couple weeks after that, I got sober, and that was it for me. I never tried anything else to get sober. I was never in treatment. I never was in therapy. I was just ready, and I think a lot of that was because the 4 months leading into getting sober, I was getting exponentially worse, and I couldn't stop. And I was so terrified that I just didn't care what I had to do. I just didn't want to lose what I knew I was going to lose. My job, any friends I had, which were minimal, but even those, I was spending so much money, binging and purging and drinking on top of that, and I couldn't stop. And it was starting to become an everyday thing. It was just exercise and starve during the day, and then drink and throw up at night, rinse, repeat. And I couldn't stop. I could not stop. And willpower was something I had in spades. It's hard work being an anorexic. I mean, you need to have a lot of willpower to be an anorexic, let's face it. And I wasn't any stranger to hard work, but it just seemed like it didn't matter how hard I worked. I couldn't stop this downward trajectory. And I couldn't ignore it anymore. Spent the last 15 years, or the 15 years before I got sober, just working out. I did a lot of fitness shows. My body was quite literally being judged on a stage. And I had, trophies on the wall to prove how much better I was than everyone else. And one day that wasn't enough. And it, after 15 years, it took me about 4 months to reach my bottom. When it started getting bad, to the time I walked in ABA, it was 4 months. That's how quickly it got bad when it started getting really bad. So my sponsor said surrender exercise. Okay, that seemed pretty doable. And of course, there were all these questions. How long am I going to be on meal support? How long do I have to surrender exercise? And the whole day at a time thing wasn't working for me. That wasn't an appropriate answer to the question. It was, I just it just seemed very kind of there was no deadline. And I could employ as much willpower as it took, as long as I knew what the deadline was. Like, how long do I have to do this for? And then I will buckle down and I will lighten up for it and I'll get it done. So, And I was on meal support, I think, for the better part of a year. And it was the best thing I ever did. Eating freely, exercising, but I'm not really even sure what that is. Not sure what the definition of that is. It's movement of some kind. I don't even know anymore. So getting sober was very freeing at first, and then it got really, really hard. There were a lot of things that I experienced that I was shocked about. I was shocked about getting hungry. I thought I shouldn't get hungry on meal support, but I did. And then I had to wait for my next meal to arrive. Now, if I'm starving myself, that's one thing. But if somebody else is making me hungry, you know, they're on my shit list for sure, you know. And I had a whole lot of feelings about it. Like, I had to eat food I didn't like. You know, it was just, I had three of the worst foods I could possibly think of within a single meal. It was just like, you know, my sponsor didn't mention that conveniently when she was like, are you willing to do whatever it takes? You know, she didn't say, are you willing to eat, you know, X, Y, and Z? And I couldn't believe that I was sober. That was just shocking to me. Like, I could not believe it. And I was a little scared at first because I thought it would go away. Like, I thought it was very short-lived because all I really knew about was willpower, and willpower ran out after a while. And so I thought, well, you know, it's just a matter of time before I go back to doing what I was doing before. And I didn't want that to be the case. I was willing to do whatever it took, but I didn't know. I'd never experienced that kind of freedom ever before. And it took me a little while and through working the steps to realize that it could last, you know. And I always tell my sponsees, step zero is, it's a must. You know, you gotta get physically sober before you work the steps. And it's worth it. It's worth every minute. And what it gave me is just the ability to eat anything that's put on my plate. You know, I call myself an equal opportunity eater. Anything that, you know, it lands on my plate, I eat. And that to me is amazing. That's just an everyday gift of sobriety. I don't really care what my body looks like anymore. And I never thought that could be true. I never thought that could be true. I didn't have friends. I didn't do anything social. Everything that I did revolved around the way that I looked. And I thought, you know, yeah, it kind of sucks, but at least, you know, at least I will look good, you know, doing it. That was kind of my consolation prize for all the suffering that I was doing. And I was really lonely. So 6.5 years later, I sponsor other people. I still work with my sponsor. And every day I really practice step zero and step one. It just feels different and looks different than it did. I choose my own food and when to, you know, move and when not to move, but it's not really a personal choice so much. It's guided by a higher power. I have trouble really explaining that, but I think that's why my sponsor was my higher power in the beginning, because I didn't have a conception of that. So it was really just about taking direction. I remember kind of the logistics of meal support being weird. No one at work knew what I was doing. I got food shipped to my house. They all thought this was a brilliant idea, so they started doing it too, which really irritated me because they had no idea that I was just, you know, pissed and like, you know, just like, oh, you know, and they're all like, oh, see, this is amazing, you know. So they're getting food brought in too, and I'm like, oh, yeah. And then about 4 months, you know, into sobriety, I had given up my gym membership, and I still haven't really set foot in a gym since I got sober. And someone came up to me and he said, "Elsie, have you been working out?" And just like, it's like, one, you know, people are not very observant, which is great because it means I'm not the one thing that's on their mind, right? And so I can get rid of the ego. But it also means that maybe I just looked healthy and just looked happy, you know, who knows? I don't know. So I just know that that was a big part of my story, was the freedom piece of it. I guess I'm actually going to leave it there. Because honestly, like, getting sober is really, really hard, but it's really, really simple. You know, don't confuse hard and complicated. You know, they're not the same thing. The simpler that I could make it, you know, the better. So get it, you know, just get a sponsor and then follow directions. And that's it. Like, just get a sponsor, follow directions, keep going to meetings. It's very simple. I would love to have everybody get sober. And I know that for me, my drug is the feeling of being in control of my food, body weight, shape, and size. That's what my addiction is. So it's every day I get to be sober, and I'm very grateful for that. And I'm grateful for all of you. So thanks very much.
Thanks, Elsie. I appreciate your sharing. My name is Joan. I'm a chronic anorexic of the hopeless variety and a compulsive eater. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful for the opportunity to participate in this workshop, and I'm glad everybody showed up. For anybody who is new, I particularly welcome you. Getting sober seems to be the thorniest problem that people encounter in ABA because it seems obscure at first to people. It really is very simple, as Elsie mentioned, but it doesn't seem simple to when we actually encounter the process of it. So just to share my own story, I've been continuously sober in ABA since July 13th, 2002. So that's, 19 years. I first sobered up on February the 24th, 1983. So for anybody who can do the math, it's actually 19 years that I ended up relapsing off and on. And I'm 72 years old today. So again, if you can do the math, I was in my mid 30s when I first sobered up, and it took 19 years for me to find continuous sobriety. So, when I first sobered up, I was absolutely and utterly defeated by anorexia. Everything I had tried, I'd been sick for almost 15 years, and everything I had tried to get rid of it hadn't worked. I'd been hospitalized. I'd read a bunch of self-help books. I had tried all the willpower I could muster. I'd had some therapy. I'd taken pills, and nothing could get rid of that obsession in my mind around my body weight. That was what it was about for me, was that fear of getting fat, that if I let down my guard for a moment, I would gain weight, and that would be a fate worse than death. So that was the way I had lived for almost 15 years, and it took almost everything from me. I lost a marriage. 5 years before I first sobered up, I lost my marriage. I lost, and the last thing that happened was I lost my career. I lost my ability to work. And I was sitting on disability insurance in my mid-30s, in the middle of winter, in my apartment in Edmonton, in Western Canada. And I was thinking constantly about suicide because I couldn't see any way out of this misery that my life had become for slowly and progressively over the past 15 years. I couldn't see any way out. I couldn't imagine. Oh, boy, sorry about that, guys. That's my phone, but it's going to ring three times and then it'll stop. I couldn't imagine any way out of it. I couldn't imagine thinking differently about food or about my body. I had thought that way for so long, and it just seemed that it was impossible to ever think differently. And so my life, I thought my life was over pretty much in my mid-30s with the divorce. You know, separated from a man I still cared about. We've been separated for 5 years. We were just getting divorced in 1983. I'd lost my career, everything that had given my life meaning was gone. I didn't have any identity other than being an anorexic. That was the only thing that was left to me. My identity as a physician was gone. My identity as a person who was helpful to others was gone. All those things I had pinned my hopes on were gone. And that's really what brought me to a place of utter defeat. The disease completely defeated me. And when I look back, that was, of course, the great gift to be able to admit defeat. That was a grace from my higher power. That grace of desperation, the grace of defeat. And so ABA didn't exist in 1983. And I'd met a few anorexics in the course of my work, but I had shuffled them off onto other doctors because I had no clue about how to help them. I had been in full knowledge of myself as an anorexic for, at that point, almost 10 years. I'd admitted it to myself, but I had limped along. So it was that defeat that allowed me to get on my knees and ask for help. I couldn't think of anything else to do. I didn't know what I was asking for, and I certainly didn't know the power that I was reaching out to, but I didn't want to commit suicide. So I got on my knees and I said, please, I don't think I said please, I just said, help me. And 2 months later, the help came. It showed up in the form of some people who appeared and offered to feed me. They didn't know that I was anorexic. And I didn't tell them I was anorexic, and I didn't ask them for meal support. I didn't even know the terminology of meal support, but they invited me to come and eat with them. And for a number of reasons, just mainly because I wanted to be with them. I liked those people. And I was so lonely and isolated in my anorexia that I just felt warm and comfortable with them. They were serving God. They were living in the inner city of Edmonton. They had a soup kitchen and a clothing drop-off place, and they just lived there and they served others. And they did that because that's what God had called them to do. And they radiated warmth and love. And I felt so comfortable being with them. And that was what allowed me to accept their offer of meal support. In fact, they invited me for lunch and the word popped out of my mouth, okay, before I could stop myself. So I was there to do a bit of volunteer work, and they invited me to come for lunch before I started working a couple days later. And so I went and I sat at their table and they prepared the food and they set it in front of me and we ate the meal together. And it was a very simple meal, but it was the first meal that I had not been in control of in some measure for almost 15 years. So that was what I needed to do, was receive that meal support. Once I did that, it's called surrender, I was freed up to, just with that little bit of sobriety, my higher power guided me through the steps over the next few hours, similar to the way that Bill did the steps in AA, if you read Bill's story in AA. And when, as he moved through that process, he had a spiritual experience. And he came to a spiritual experience, and it was very dramatic for him. The room filled with light. It was the great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. He experienced vividly the presence of God in the room with him. And the great clean wind didn't blow through and through, and I didn't have any visual experience of God. But what I had was a lightning bolt. It was as if a lightning bolt had struck me and completely revolutionized the way I think, which is the way a spiritual experience is described in Appendix 2 of the Doctor's Opinion. So, Appendix 2 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, where there's a revolutionary change in the way we think. And for most of us, of course, it comes very gradually. At that particular moment, it came dramatically for me, and I had I just had the experience of, it was as if I'd been sleepwalking and I'd come to, or I'd been hypnotized and the hypnotist brought me out of the trance. That was the inner experience I had, was waking up. It was literally a waking up to, it's gone. This obsession with my body was gone, and the need to count calories and watch what I ate and everything was gone. And waking up to that, I realized that I had been under the sway of this thing for almost 15 years. And I was baffled by how I could ever have done that, succumbed to this notion that I was going to get fat if I didn't watch what I ate. And it just baffled me that I could lose 15 years of my life to an idea, a fear that I was going to get fat. So that was my first experience of being free from the obsession. And I believe that I was given that experience by my higher power because there was nothing else, right? There was no other way for me to be able to go home that night and feed myself. The only way I was going to be able to do that was if the obsession was removed, if the anorexic obsession with my body weight was removed, my fear of eating certain foods was removed. It had to be removed because there was nobody to provide me with meal support that night. And ABA didn't exist, and I didn't have a sponsor, and I had no literature to read, and I'd never heard of the 12-step program. I didn't hear about the 12 steps till 9 years later. But the elements are the same for anybody getting sober today. The elements are the same. The need to surrender, to let go of the feeling of control over our food and over our weight and over our body shape. And it's just that simple. It's very, very simple. And the only way to let go of that feeling of control was to have somebody else feed me, because I was incapable of feeding myself. I'd been sick for too long. I was too afraid of most foods to eat them. And so I could never have put them on my plate and eaten them. So that's not, of course, the end of my story. I lapsed into drinking about 3 months later. And as soon as I started drinking, because I was no longer afraid of the calories now, so I could drink, and I'm an alcoholic. I didn't know I was an alcoholic, but I am. And not being afraid of the calories any longer, I started drinking, and I began to drink alcoholically. And as soon as I began drinking, my anorexia got its foot in the door again, too. I started to use bits of control and here and there. I never lost the weight again that I had lost. In the 3 months that I had been eating freely, I had regained enough of the weight I had lost that my period started again and I was able to function in the world much better. My brain worked again. And that, so I never lost that weight that I gained in 1983. I got pregnant a year later and I had 3 pregnancies babies within 4 years. My body has never succumbed to anorexia the way it did in the early years, those first 15 years. But certainly the obsession, whenever I started taking back that feeling, using that feeling of control again over my weight, over my food, over, I can't eat that because it'll make me fat. After each of my pregnancies, I relapsed fairly majorly because I wanted to get that weight off. Once I got those kids weaned, I relapsed into control, attempting to control them. My last child was born in 1989, and I weaned him in 1990, and I relapsed again into anorexia. So it's been a long haul of lots of ABA started in 1993, and that helped a lot because I now had a community of people that I could share with, and we could talk about things. But even in ABA, it's been a long haul to come to any form of sanity in my thinking. I got to AA in 1994. I took my last drink in 95. Once I got to AA in 94, I started working with a sponsor. I'd never had a sponsor before that. That made all the difference to have a sponsor to guide me through the big book, through the 12-step program. And as I did that, more came to light around my anorexia too. As I say, I started working the steps in 94. In 2002, I finally got continuous sobriety in ABA. And that's by the grace of God, solely by the grace of God. So life is very different today. Today, I don't need anybody to provide me with meal support. Although if somebody's willing to invite me over for a meal, I'm delighted to go. Because I have no fear of eating any, I don't worry about what I'm being fed. I never think about that. It doesn't occur to me to worry what the person is going to prepare and serve or how much butter they put into something. It just, those thoughts never come to me. The obsession is removed with food. Around my body, I occasionally, today, I still will have the thought that I'm fat sometimes. And that's a gift from my higher power. It's a mercy from my higher power because it keeps me connected with you guys. I can't imagine that I now have power over my insane eating practices. As long as I have that thought that I'm fat, it keeps me coming back to ABA. It keeps me knowing that I'm just the same as everybody else in these rooms and that we're all sober today by the grace of God alone. There's no way to do this in isolation. There's no way to continue to recover in isolation. So, I think I'll stop there. And I thank you for listening. Look forward to the rest of the workshop. Thanks.